Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Coming up in this edition of TV Black Box, Nine staff in shock as the head of news suddenly quits. Meanwhile, execs at the network are celebrating the rating success of quarter one. We'll speak with the programming boss, Hamish Turner, and why British fans of Doctor Who are fuming over a major change to the show. Welcome to the podcast where people in the industry get their news recorded live in front of a streaming audience. This is TV Black Box.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is TV Black Box, bringing you the inside goss from the TV industry.
Indeed we are. Hello, welcome one and all to TV Black Box, whether you're watching us live as we stream across the world at 8 p.m. Sydney, Melbourne time on a Tuesday night, or whether you're listening to us at the podcast, which we still appreciate your support for doing so. Joining us tonight is the little engine that almost couldn't. David Robbo Robinson had car trouble, but he made it. Hello, Robbo.
Look, you know, even in the glamorous world of television, cars sometimes don't work. But you know what does work? A pocket kerchief and a little bit of effort.
I was going to mention the pocket kerchief.
It's got there because we had some comment last week. I can't remember your name, but please let me know as well that, you know, I was the only one that wore a collared shirt. Well, now I've upped the ante. I've got a lovely little suit jacket on here, a kerchief. But I do have to notice, though, that Bobby McKnight has also found a collared shirt. I mean, he didn't find an iron. He couldn't find an iron, for Christ's sake, even though he lives in a hotel room. He couldn't get housekeeping to do it. He couldn't get the ironing board out for himself, but at least he's put a shirt on that has a bloody collar. Well done.
I did actually iron this shirt this morning, but it's been a big day. But what
you look lovely.
Say,
you look very handsome.
Thank you, Robert. I have to be honest with you. I didn't even remember that whole thing, but I'll say that I did it for the fans. Hey, we should also bring in this bloke because if we don't, he'll just get frustrated and annoyed. Oh, maybe we'll delay it. Hello, Malky, the viewer's advocate. How are you, my friend?
Good evening. That's all it deserved too. Good evening, friends. I'm coming to you tonight from the land of the duck and jung people, and I pay my respects to their elders past and present. Robbo, I'm glad you could join us. There was some concern that you wouldn't make it. Rob, you're here too.
Hang on. Podcast listeners and watchers, go to the end of last week's episode. He's used the same joke I used against him. Hey, Malky. Plagiarism.
Rob, you do say something to me every week where I say, you know, I do a sight gag, but there's, you know, we've got our listeners on there. I can really hear crickets. Can no one, wait, just stop for a minute. Stop. Oh, shit, they were there before, or maybe it was this way.
I've lost the crickets.
Well, they're definitely here coming to you from the depths of the Central Coast.
I can give you.
Oh, no, don't give Rob sound effects. Not cues.
I just woke up from a drop.
I let you down, Rob. This is probably why we should rehearse these things. So anyway, I'm in Sydney tonight. I'm coming to you from the Meriton Suites. Yeah, that's where I am this week. So.
The former home of the Meriton Suites team.
Oh, it's a chin. And like meriton.com.au to get a little special there if we need an upgrade.
Use the promo code SEXYROB.
I can't support that.
Jesus.
All the very best. All the very best.
For a second.
tried something, it didn't work. All right, let's get into it. There is a lot to discuss tonight because a sudden resignation on Friday afternoon of Nine's news boss Darren Wick sent newsrooms into a spin. Now, I say sudden, but rumours had been around for weeks that Wick's time as the head of news and current affairs was coming to an end. Despite firm denials from Nine, the news was dropped late on Friday night in an email to staff with Wiki saying, "This is my 13th year in that position and my 29th year at the network. It's been a privilege to work alongside such talented, inspirational and supportive people. Malk, I've worked with Wiki. I like Wiki. I think he'll be a loss to the newsroom."
Look, it's anyone that's been involved with the organisation for as long as Darren Wick has, 29 years with Nine, and he hasn't, you know, he spent time in the newsroom, he's been like a journalist in the field, he's done a whole bunch of stuff, and for the last, was it something like 8 or 13 or something, he's been the director of news for Nine.
13.
That's a phenomenal run by anybody's measure in modern media. You'd have to say that some of the success of Nine absolutely comes out of his leadership and the way that that's functioned. And to that end, whoever has...
Whatever.
No, probably not. Though I'm sure they played a part of it, Rob. I think that whoever does step into the shoes after him will have very sizable shoes to fill and a very excellent team to work with to grow into whatever the next phase of Nine's news product around the country looks like.
Robbo, this has really annoyed a lot of media writers because there were rumours circulating for a few weeks. Nine, even on Friday, were denying anything was going on. They said he was coming back, that he was just taking some time out. And when you read things like the Media Diary and other articles, you can see that the media writers are a bit pissed off, can't you?
Oh, of course you can, but if they don't get the scoop, they get a little bit pissed, but that's fine. Look, I want to say this. If you can survive in the media for 29 years, great. If you can survive in the media at Channel 9 in Sydney for 29 years, that is exceptional. And if you can survive for 13 years as a news director at 9 in Sydney, but also across the country, that is an amazing achievement. This guy has certainly proved his weight in gold, and 9 should be very, very thankful for having someone like Darren Wick at the helm. This is a fantastic achievement for someone, and especially in a very changing news media landscape. Because you remember, if we're talking about this 30 years ago, you know, that it was pretty easy to get your stripes on the board. It's been very, very hard, but people have turned to Nine for news, but they've also turned internally to Wiki to help grow that kind of that local vibe in the newsroom. It's a very, very hard job to do. I think he's done a wonderful job, and I think congratulations. And I think we all agree with that. Like, it's a tough job, and he's done very well for a very long time.
Oh, look, I'm a fan, and you can't. He has. What's the saying? You can't make an omelette without breaking some eggs. He's certainly broken some eggs.
He has, but I believe you can't run a newsroom unless your last name is Wick. I'm pretty sure that's the saying, isn't it? Is that right? Is that the saying? That's how I've always lived my media career.
It's interesting. Well, there's a little bit more to come on this because we're about to run our interview with Hamish Turner, the boss of Nine, and find out a few details. And I put a few names to him about possible replacements. So we'll... Well, hey, I tell you what, why don't we get to it now? Because still on Channel 9 and the network is touting its Q1 performance thanks to the success of the Australian Open, Tipping Point and, of course, Married at First Sight. In fact, the number of people watching MAFS has grown by 3.1% year on year to record a total TV audience of 2.074 million. I mean, seriously, in anyone's terms, that is amazing. As I just mentioned, I spoke with Nine's programming boss, Hamish Turner, on Monday about the result and a few other issues. So roll the tape, Malk. Welcome to TV Black Box again.
Thank you, Rob. Good to see you and first time in the flesh.
I know. Obviously, as part of TV Black Box being on video now, we've got you on our video, so good to have you here. Of course, we've met many times, but you guys are pretty happy over at Nine with how quarter one's gone.
Yeah, look, it's been a great start. Obviously, kicked off with the Australian Open. We had, you know, I think 25% growth year on year. I think the really pleasing thing with the Oz Open this year was the rise of the next wave of talent. The likes of Yannick Sinner, Alcaraz, they just had an amazing match overseas where Alcaraz downed him. But those new names have started to kind of bubble to the top you know, with the likes of Barty and Kyrgios and Federer no longer there, it was so good to kind of just see this new wave of talent that'll kind of keep us in this kind of position over the next kind of 5 to 10 years. And then, you know, it was a big year for us as well because we just launched a new game show, the first new game show in that 5 o'clock strip for a very long time.
Which you'd have to be blind, Freddie, not to know that that would work, but I know it was a gamble taking off Millionaire Hot Seat. I understand all the politics and the nervousness around that, but it's paid off.
Oh, look, I think we were fortuitous in that we obviously bought the UK tape a few years ago. We were able to see how it performed, and we trialled it in a variety of different areas, and it was able to perform in all those areas. And so although these things come with risk, you are able to mitigate the risk to a degree by being able to trial it and see how an audience, you know, consumes that content. And it did a great job for us. So I think what we didn't know was how good Todd was going to be. We obviously
Inspired choice. You know, it's very easy to go back to the game show well and use people who've done it before. But you went out on a limb and got someone new in, and he has done brilliantly.
Well, he's done an amazing job in that role. And I think, you know, obviously the cross promotion between the Australian Open and going in provided us a great platform. But ESA and the internal team here have done a great job in terms of crafting that, especially with the gameplay at the end. Obviously, you need to tweak these shows and those 5 o'clock shows to really drive audience into your 6 p.m. news. As you know, as a newsman, they're crafted that way, and it's been able to deliver, and we've seen an increase in both that time slot but also the news slot. So far, so good.
We'll get to Married at First Sight because that's the big one, but you've mentioned news. Obviously, you, again, took a big risk. You've changed your hosting lineup in Melbourne. So far, Alicia and Tom are doing good business.
Yeah, look, Craig must go to Hughie Nayland, who obviously looks after the GTV news. It has added a new dynamic. There's a real vibrancy to that team, and I think, you know, they're delivering. Alicia's obviously got the runs on the board in Melbourne. I used to work with her back down in the days at GTV, and then obviously Tom is a Melburnian. He's been up in Sydney for a while, but with kind of a burgeoning family, has decided to shift home. And, they're a great combination and they bring something very different to that role. And so it's great to see the audience respond as they have. And actually, Hitchie is doing an amazing job on the weekend. Saturday, Sunday, we're doing some great numbers there as well. So all those things combined, we're very happy. And
But obviously on Friday we had the resignation of Darren Wick, who was the head of news and current affairs, a big loss?
Yeah, look, obviously Wiki's part of the furniture here. He's been here since I've been up in Sydney. Well-loved. He's done a great job holding the reins of the biggest newsroom in the country, and he's got his big shoes to fill. But he's obviously made a personal decision, and we really support him in that. And, news never stops, and so very sad to see him go, but we need to move on with the news cycle. So look, Wiki will farewell him in the right manner, and obviously there'll be announcements made around who's going to fill those shoes moving forward.
Do you think it'll be an internal candidate or someone external?
I think probably both are on the cards, but I think we tend to look internally to find the right candidate, and we'll go from there and go through the due process.
Well, internally, you have a lot of good candidates. You've got Simon Hobbs, who's the TCN News Director, Hugh Nayland, you've already mentioned. Tom Malone's been on the cards for a while now. He's done 60 Minutes, he's done radio, he was the EP of Today's Show. His name would certainly be in the mix.
Well, you're obviously speculating, Rob, and thought about it. I'll leave the speculation to you.
You know me, it's not always speculation. But anyway, Married at First Sight, that is the golden goose, isn't it? And Hamish, you know, in years gone by, there's been talk about toning it down and everything. Why would you? It's a success. The more outrage, the better, isn't it?
Look, I think, interestingly, this year, the outrage gets the headlines, but this year it's been the depth of storytelling. I think the array of participants on that show this year, we've seen a little bit of change in terms of that texture. Some of the older participants are really popping. Yeah. You know, some have described it as our sad core era, where that kind of real authentic storyline is really coming to play. And we've seen that play out with quite a few different storylines. So I think it's the fact that it's a show that just doesn't stop surprising.
That's certainly true.
As I've said before, it is a show that really holds up the mirror to society. Sometimes you'll love it, sometimes you'll hate it. But what it won't leave you with is a feeling of numbness or irrelevancy. And in a world where you need to drive for relevancy, it's that show. And it continues to populate the zeitgeist and continues to generate, you know, ridiculous numbers and storylines. So we're very proud of the show. ESA done an amazing job with the show and has managed to kind of keep it fresh and vibrant and relevant. I think, you know, shows go through a lot of different chapters in their life cycle. And there was a period, obviously, where you had the haters. And I think now it's kind of found its comfortable space. And I think, you know, it's maths. People love it.
They certainly do. You must, as a programmer, it must be nice to know that you've got the Australian Open straight into Married at First Sight, which is why we end up with press releases like this touting number one in Q1. It's a nice place to be in, isn't it?
It is, but, you know, sometimes those shows that burn brightly, it's about how do you continue to kind of manage that success.
Which is the amazing thing with maths. You think, how can it go bigger? And somehow it does.
Well, I think this year, if you said, you know, you're going to get total TV audience growth with that franchise, I would have taken that every day of the week. So all things considered, it has done an amazing job. I think we kind of talk about it a lot internally, just in terms of a fragmented market, and sometimes those bigger brands really have that magnetic force behind them, where it is that kind of that driving agent where people kind of come in and want to have that shared experience. And that's what TV does. And, you know, the great thing for both 7 and 9 this year is we've had total TV growth. And I think off the back of kind of those COVID years and where those numbers settled, to be able to be in TV growth is a really good news story.
It's fantastic, and hopefully the advertising market comes back, because it has been a bit soft recently.
Yeah, look, it's a challenging market. But again, talking about Blind Freddy, I don't think you need to be Blind Freddy to kind of see the kind of crunch that we're in at the moment, just in terms of, you know, cost of living. You know, housing prices have never been higher. And so I think those mortgage rates are really hitting, and people are kind of questioning where they're looking to spend their money. And so what might have been 7 subs have now kind of been crunched into 2 or 3. And I did that over the Christmas break. I went, oh, hang on, what have I spent here? And what free-to-air does is that free agent. And when you've got a big hit show, you get their people there in masses. And I don't know, it's that binding agent that brings everyone together. And we're happy to be the platform that has that.
As we start to rely on the catch-up services, 9Now, 7plus, 10Play, or the others, do you feel that the apps are on par with the Netflix apps and Disney Plus, or is there a way to go for the Australian broadcasters?
Look, I think pure hygiene, we're in a good spot. I think it's very difficult to compete against Netflix in terms of their UX, their product and tech, because, you know, for what we might have 100 people, they've got 2,000. So yeah. I think if we were to sit here and go, it's the best user experience that we could possibly have, then you're kidding yourself. Are we doing a good job? Yes. Can we do better? 100%. And that's something that needs to continue to evolve, and we need to challenge ourselves. But, you know, we have Stan as part of the family, and they're also in that game. And so we'll continue to lean on them to understand what audiences want and what their demands are, and what kind of, you know, kind of best in class looks like. But if you think you've got it nailed, then you're going to be wrong. So I think we can always continue to challenge ourselves how we bring our content to audiences in different environments. But mate, you like to say this, and I do, content is king and it will always be king. It's just surfacing it in the right way.
Couldn't agree more with that. To the press release, good press release. I like the fact that when you're talking each show, you're talking national TV audience, you're talking about BVOD, you're talking about the reach numbers, which is something that I was very into at the beginning, now not so much. I seem to personally be settling on the national total TV audience. There has been some criticism in Mumbrella today about the shares used.
Who was that via?
That was Mumbrella via Channel 7. I was about to get that. And look, this is where I've got to do the conflicts. So I work for Nine Radio in various capacities, and I work at Spotlight on 7. So just so everyone knows, we all know where I'm coming from, but I try to be objective.
No, that's all right. That's all right. It's a fair question.
It is interesting because this is when the new rating system came through. We're all trying to get our head around it. But I personally have fallen on that national total TV. That's my go-to figure.
Yep.
But when you have done the shares, you've gone back to five cap cities. Don't we need to keep it standard?
I think the VOZ numbers are a set of numbers that you will have represented in different ways. So if you go to the kind of macro level, absolutely total national audience, which incorporates BVOD, regional, and metro, and that's a really good way to represent a number for a show. I think from a share perspective, we own our metros and we've been very clear on that. And so we choose to report our metro numbers in that light. But I think, in terms of transparency, we're very clear within that report and those numbers around what we're reporting on. I don't think, we're chopping and changing it in a way that is misleading to anyone. And even by Seven's own admission, even if you cut it to a national share, we're still winning. So I don't think the headline changes.
No, and I think even they admitted that bit that was in Mumbrella. So you've won Q1. It's like a AFL game. It's in four halves. It's going to be a tough going forward because the AFL on 7, NRL on 9, of course, which is going gangbusters. But it really now gets competitive, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, I think we've had a great start to the year, absolutely. And this year will be highlighted, obviously, with the Olympics. So I think if we're going to underestimate that as being a huge draw of crowds and a really strategic pillar for us in terms of, driving and presenting the event in its best light and also driving into the back end of the year. We've got Lego Masters coming. First promo is amazing promo. Australia vs. the World, leaning into that kind of whole Olympic spirit. The Summit Season 2 returns. It's bigger and better than ever. So I think we've got a lot of good content to come. Travel guides will also come in Q2. But then we get into, Paris Olympics and the Paralympics. And so we're really looking forward. We haven't had it since 2012. Obviously, the world has changed in terms of how people consume content and really looking forward to how Nine now can position itself in terms of delivering that event like we've never seen before. But Rob, like we use these events to promote and market other assets within the business. And so, as AO and Meredith First Sight have started that momentum for us as we drive into the year, I think the Olympics will then push us through to the back end of the year with the 20th season of the block. So, I think
the timing is fantastic. Having the Olympics at that point as another launching pad is fantastic for Nine. And I'm sure we'll see lots of promos during the Olympics for things like the block. What's your big prediction for 2024? Nine doesn't usually talk about total people these days. It's 25 to 54. Who do you see taking it out?
I don't tend to worry myself in terms of kind of the macro. I think it's show by show. It's ensuring that, each one of those individual brands are in a really good position, and how that ladders up into a broader number is kind of down to the TV gods ultimately. But if we're looking after our shows and looking after our brands and looking after our news franchise, and doing the best thing by it and our audience, then I think we'll get to the end of the year and be really happy with the results.
Well, Hamish, I always enjoyed talking to you. You're very open, you're very frank, and I admire what you do. So thank you for being on TV Black Box and congratulations on your first quarter. It's going to be an interesting year, I think.
No, thanks, Rob. I think it's always interesting years. Everything continues to evolve, but they're never dull. So looking forward to it. And I think you should spray paint that gold on that microphone.
You think I should do the Carl Sander lens, do you?
Yeah, Carl Sander. Well, John Laws did it as well, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He started it. Yeah, although it's got a nice golden light on it at the moment. But
the golden halo. Yeah. We'll stay with that.
Thank you, Hamish.
Thanks, Rob. Cheers, mate.
Sorry, I was going to get that pocket handkerchief and wipe my brow here. Who the hell is Daddy Turner? I mean, he looks like he should be on The Bloody Bachelor. Jeepers creepers. I mean, friend of the show. But, you know, you started the great interview, by the way. I only saw half of it because I was watching one part of the screen. But it was absolutely very, I mean, sorry, is that anyone? It's hot in here. I've got it's aircon. Like,
it's
wonderful,
always good
though
to be a serious podcast and start talking about how someone looks.
No, so. No, but no. Hey. I'm sure he's very talented, but you know, that was fantastic, and a big shout out to Hamish, who's a big friend of the show and very, very handsome man. Rob, what I loved though is your sports references in there. Four quarters. I thought you said four quarters,
halves,
and I thought
four halves.
Well, four halves, but then I thought four corners, wrong network. But you know, Hamish took it and he went with it. I thought that was fantastic. What a great interview from Hamish, and I think who did that? Was that you, Mark, or you, Rob? Who was the other person on that show?
It was Al McKnight.
Rob McKnight. Oh, yeah, fantastic. Loved it.
Thank you, Robert. Mark, to the serious side now.
Jesus.
You know,
I can't help it. I mean, I'm red-blooded, you know what I mean? I've got a handkerchief, for Christ's
sake. You are outrageous, but we love you for it. Malk, ratings, you know, Nine have made the big claims. Seven didn't like the fact that they talked Metro shares when they talk shares. But the claims are right on the money when it comes to the performance of their programs. They've had a good first quarter.
Yeah, they really have. You just can't escape the halo that Married at First Sight has offered every program in Nine schedule across Q1. And it's really only been this late transition where the AFL and the NRL have now kicked in that Seven have had a run in of any kind of help in the back half. Like, their stuff has been performing well, just not keeping up with Married at First Sight because nothing is.
Yeah.
And then with the AFL coming in, that is Seven's bread and butter and the audiences are tuning in for it. So it's doing good business for them in that back half of the week. Super great. I feel for all of the PR Jedis at the moment because they're wanting to show, and Nine, look, to their great credit, stuck it out and said, hey, how good is it? They're wanting to show the growth in their audiences. They're wanting to show how well they're performing this year compared to previous years. And because of those changes in the way ratings are collected and what they're giving us out of OzTAM with the VOZ numbers now, there just is no apples to apples comparison. So for that's publicly available. So for Nine to say, we're going to take this five city metro figure that they then get in the background and can make comparisons to last year, I think is a fair one. And I think, frankly, we'll see Seven do the same in Q2. But it's like, what can you do? If you're wanting to say, we're doing better than last year, and Seven also did in their rebuttal say, we're doing better than last year, but I don't know how they made the comparison because they didn't show they're working. That's the real problem when it comes to ratings. You have to show you're working. And this year is more important than ever because we've got a new metric versus an old metric and they do not marry at all. So you can't compare A to B. You've got to be able to say this was last year, this is this year, and this is how it all comes together. Next year will be a different box of dice again. But as – well, tonight, Australian Survivor finishes up for 10. Next week, we've got Australian Idol and Married at First Sight both finishing up for 7 and 9 respectively. There's a big change. And – I know you want to push through this, Rob, but I just want to raise again. I'll stick my head above the parapet. It's 2024. There is zero requirement for a two-week Easter non-ratings break. It's correct. Just not a thing.
Agree.
And yep. We're seeing... Yeah,
Married at First Sight is going through the Easter break. So
only just. Like, it's finishing on Monday.
It's not.
Oh, is it pushing, jumping out into the weeks after? because
get ready for a reunion episode.
Yeah, but there I thought there already was a reunion episode on the cards. I haven't looked into the guide too deeply next week to see what and where that lands. But that said, with non-ratings starting officially on Monday for 2 weeks, Tenor pushing on, I'm a Celebrity starts on Sunday. We've got Nine continuing MAFs, and then they are running straight into Gordon Ramsay's Food Stars Australia, which starts on Tuesday, which is why I thought MAFs finishes, but that's a whole other box of dice. Seven are just going, nah, you can have Highway Patrol. Like they're literally taking a break in their schedule for the first half of the week anyway, and I don't understand it. I don't understand what's going on.
Because if they can discount that in their final ratings report and hold their fire for the start of resumption of ratings and know that Nine will finally burn off Married at First Sight, it's an even playing field. Why would you launch?
Yeah, but it's not an even playing field.
Why?
Because straight away you're going to get 9 and 10, rightly claiming here is our calendar year performance, not making the exclusions.
Yeah, but Seven might still be able to do that, but why would you launch?
They will not.
I'll get the question out eventually. Why would you launch your new shows up against the MAFS juggernaut?
But this is my point. Ostensibly, MAFS finishes on Monday night. I know there's other bits to come, but
hey, it doesn't finish.
It's been running, but it's been running 4 nights a week since it started, and on Tuesday next week, it is not running.
Yes, but
so they're starting Food Stars, right?
But networks don't launch a show on a Tuesday night,
but they are. But Nine literally are.
Yes,
it's a new format.
When you're coming off MAFS, that's fine, but let's be honest, if Seven are bringing back their new shows or launching a big show, it's going to happen on a Sunday or a Monday.
Do they not have faith in them, Rob?
No, I'm saying I wouldn't want to go up against MAFS either.
No, but you're not going up against MAFS on Tuesday night. MAFS is done. MAFS ostensibly might have a Sunday night or a Monday night to come, sure, but Tuesday, Wednesday are a whole new not MAFS show, and Seven aren't backing their new programs in to run against what could be conceivably a free hit because it is an untested format in our market, yet they're going, oh, we'll just give you like the UK version of the 1% Club. Like, fuck off.
Well, that's, I understand you don't like it, but I've been trying
to get out. It's lazy programming.
I've been trying to get out all this time that MAFS goes until April 7.
Sure, and that'll be a Sunday, Monday special, right, is what's going to happen in those contexts. But we've still then got Tuesday, Wednesday, half of the first half of the week that Seven have lost every week this year that they have the capacity to win that might give them a week win.
Well, I just don't see the problem with if knowing that you've got an official 2 week break holding your
and people
are away. People, you know, traditionally do things over Easter. Why it's a problem to hold your fire and come back strong with the resumption of ratings.
Yeah, but this year Easter is nowhere near school holidays. So no one, apart from the physical Easter weekend, no one's going away. The kids have to be at school on Thursday and the following Tuesday. So that like to that end, this is what I'm getting at. I understand in the past it may have been a thing. It's not a thing in 2024. In fact, it hasn't been a thing for nearly 10 years. So you need to program, not you, but the you know what I'm saying, take the opportunity to either like open hand Mazaire, lay it out like Tenor doing. Hey, everyone, it's I'm a Celebrity for like a 3.5 week burst. Bang. We're just going to give you all of that ostensibly maybe to write out some of that stuff, but also because it's a known brand, whatever. Nine are giving us some MAFS and some Food Stars, like Merry Christmas to everybody, and Seven are literally giving us nothing.
Can I say, though, that can it be also
the ratings?
Can I say also it's a bit of comfort programming? So people know what they're going to get with MAFS. Mm-hmm. And people like that. So I think that they like what's going to happen and they know what the kind of show they're going to get. So to put up another show to try and compete is just not going to work. Someone does, though, have a very good point. Lisa Carter here is saying on our comments that aren't we up against MAFS tonight? We are, but we're the ratings winner. If you go by the you know, the B VODs and the N VODs and the D VODs and the L VODs and the Internet VODs and the Google VODs, you'll find that TV Black Box, change this shot, please. That's cutting out my whole face.
Mate, you brought up the comment. I just brought it. That's how it works now, mate.
I don't think the sidebar works, Mog, because,
no, I don't like it.
The older comments don't go in there. It's only when
I've also got to deal with, though, you two bitches. I've got to deal with the fact that I've got the watermark here and now I've got to deal with the comments going across my face.
Right. That doesn't work for an audio podcast, Robert.
No one cares about audio anymore.
One thing I would like to bring up is the replacements. When I mentioned that to Hamish, obviously he's very coy about that.
Sure.
But it's funny, I was talking to people today and someone said to me, if Nine was smart, wouldn't they just offer Craig McPherson the job? Craig McPherson is the head of news and current affairs at Seven. Very good operator. If you wanted to kneecap Seven a little bit, you'd steal him and put him in at Nine, wouldn't you?
Get Sonia in the deal back. Look, it's not an outrageous idea, and who's to say that those conversations haven't already been happening?
You never know. And
you never go.
Robbo, a few people have noticed that I've got a jacket now.
So I understand the between audio and visual, but when you do visual, I don't know if you've ever done video or TV broadcast or anything. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but there's a thing called continuity. And I also noticed that you went down. But I thought we couldn't do sight gags here, but that's the best sight gag tonight.
Mulk is very much naked, ladies and gentlemen, of the audio podcast. You really have missed a sight.
Man up, friends.
Wow.
Can I say one thing about this? Audio is dead. I mean, look at radio. No one listens to Kyle and Jackie O anymore. I don't believe that, but I just want to say it for my point.
200 million.
That's a quick change. That's a bit of change. But I just want to say, look, get onto the video podcast. That's where it's at. We're talking about TV. It's a visual medium. So I'm going to continue to do my sight gags here, and I've got one coming up that's going to rock your socks.
All right. Well, I put the jacket on to try and match you, but I think Mulk has outdone us all. All right. Coming up, an announcement of sorts at Paramount Australia. Has the BBC been shortchanged on the new series of Doctor Who? And we'll find out what everyone's been watching in the TV binge box.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Oh, thank God. So we can have a cigarette now. Oh, no, we're still on air. Oh, sorry.
I
thought that was an ad break. I'm so sorry. I thought that was an ad break. I'm so sorry. Sorry.
Interrupt the intro.
Oh, I'm about to do it again.
Paramount Global has announced that Beverly McGarvey has been appointed president of Network 10, head of streaming and regional lead for Australia and New Zealand, effective immediately. In her expanded role, McGarvey will have both commercial and creative leadership of Paramount's multi-platform business in Australia, with oversight of Network 10 and its portfolio of brands, including 10plate. Well, Robbo, I guess 10 must be happy with the way 10's performing.
Sorry, I was just reacting to your intro there. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, look, it's a wonderful network. I bleed blue and gold, and then I bled blue and silver because that's what the way the logo turned. Hold on 1 minute. What? I don't think I'm alone in what I've read across media commitments across newspapers, comments, talking to people who are in the industry. I have to be a little surprised. I'm a little surprised by this. That's why I did that classic gag of spit take, and that's obviously not on the audio podcast, but I'm sure you can hear it.
We heard it. We've heard it, mate.
This is a little bit worrisome, and I think it's worrisome for people who are still in the industry and also still working at 10. This person has had a long time in the industry and has had hits, though, so we can't take it away from that.
What hits?
I was trying to do that kind of like I worked for the ABC for a while, so I do the both sides of the argument, but I had nothing to back up the other one. This is a surprise and a surprise to everyone. So all jokes aside, a surprise to media writers, a surprise to journalists, a surprise to presenters, a surprise to producers. And I don't mean to harbour the facts, but what don't we know? Why is this being promoted all the time? Because in any other world, in any other time, I think this person would have not enjoyed the success or the promotions that they have. I'm shocked by this.
It's interesting. Last year, 10 had its slowest rating since Oz10 was started. It's got its lowest commercial share. Its revenue is way down. Paramount Global, obviously aren't interested enough in what's happening here or don't understand the history of the place. Maybe they think it's always been like this. But I would have thought by now fresh leadership could have possibly brought fresh results. But there's so many executives going and Bev's now got that many portfolios. It's really going to be her there putting the network to air in presentation, commissioning the shows, writing the scripts, probably hosting as well, because I can tell you the newsroom can't even afford a researcher that they had. There's so many jobs that they're advertising jobs and then saying, oh, no, we can't actually afford to have that job. So, and the word that was used to me about Channel 10 at the moment is it's dire inside the building. So...
But why does it happen? I don't understand. I know I'm speaking for a lot of people here.
If you're gearing up for a sale or a merger, why change anything? Keep the cost down. Keep one person with more responsibilities.
Right.
Just keep sailing. Keep sailing the ship until you hit sand and basically the it's sold up.
I look forward to the executive meeting when Bev is meeting with Bev. That's where it's headed, right? Like, that's currently our position. And up until this announcement, she legitimately was meeting with herself when she had her co-CEO meetings. But that's – anyway. A hypothetical, friends, to try and – let's be positive about what's happening or what could happen with 10. If there was to be someone else step into that CEO role, let's say Bev decides to step out or something – and I'm going to preface this question by saying I think that the Australian business has done itself a disservice by actually not building succession well into particularly our linear broadcast business. We don't have a line of executives, and I'm as 7 and 9 and 10, right? We don't have a line of executives where we can go, right, you're performing well. Here's your opportunity. We've been grooming you, preparing you, those sorts of things. Who could we tap on the shoulder to take over the CEO role of 10 if, hypothetically, it became available?
I'm ready.
I agree with this.
Wasn't an opportunity or an opening or an invitation. I'm asking legitimately about who else in the industry could we tap in.
I think Channel 10, you'd have to go outside because I think...
100%. Who still?
I think you're underestimating the industry at the moment in all seriousness. You look at 7 in the middle of a transition phase. James Warburton will finish up in a couple of months and he's slowly handing over the reins. James
Howard, finance guy. He's the finance guy.
See ya. I had the pleasure of meeting him at the Hubble launch and, I found him quite interesting and he seemed to know his stuff. So I'm interested to see what he does with 7. When Hugh Marks stepped down as CEO of Channel 9, it went to Mike Sneesby and Mike... came from Stan, and you've got other potential CEOs in the building, obviously people like Tom Malone, who everyone anticipates at some stage will be the CEO, and that's why he is a strong contender to take over from Darren Wick because, there was talk about that last year and there were reasons why it didn't happen then. So, things do change, the sands do shift, but Tom Malone would definitely still be on the cards to take over that role as a stepping stone to eventually becoming CEO.
And no doubt, though, and I think that we've seen over the years across all media, across all free-to-air in Australia, that the CEOs who come up, they know the numbers, they know how to break even or not, all that kind of thing, but we've lost CEOs who can do that but also have a love of television and have a love of programming. And I think we've lost that. Obviously,
David Gingell did.
Yes, we don't have them anymore. That's my point. We don't have them anymore. We're now going more to the people, and no offence to them, and I don't mean to disparage them, but we're going to people who've made their way up the finance department, does payroll work, how do we make sure that the ads are paid for, no one seems to have a genuine love, and I'm talking the Lecky love, the Packer love of television. We don't have that anymore. So those two people, for an example, they knew numbers, they knew one plus one, but they also had an idea and a passion for the product. What we're getting now, though, is finance people. Now, finance people are great, but they need to make sure that one plus one equals two. Now, in TV, sometimes when you get a new show, one plus one equals 1.5, and then you've got to give it a bit more time, and then it might get to two. That's the problem, and that's what's going to stop it. Now, streaming has a bit more freedom with that. So streaming has these original programming, which we're seeing. It's almost like in streaming for Stan and locally at the ABC, they're having that little bit of idea of going, well, this is what we used to do in the old days. We can give these programs a chance, and that's what's going to happen. We don't see that on free-to-air because it's all about one plus one equals two. And when you go viewers, one viewer plus one viewer does not always equal two straight away, and that's the problem.
Good point.
Can I just quickly pick up on a little bit of what Robbo said? I think there's a couple of things in here, and I appreciate that the CEO role is not a popularity contest. However, in the last 35 years of Australian television, the CEO of the network has absolutely had a significant public profile beyond just the media industry. People have known who is the boss of 7, 9, 10, even the ABC, dare I say it, and SBS if you're a super media nerd, but they're niche. The challenge for new bloke coming into 7, good on him, welcome aboard, do a great job. I haven't met him. I've read his name on a press release a few times. I don't know what his TV credentials are other than he has got lots of experience being an excellent CFO in a television network. My only concern about coming in as someone who is a numbers man is that your first job is to cut numbers. Because you have an excellent understanding of that and not so much the love of programming. And this is where I think what you raised, Robbo, is super, super important for Bev's successor, for even, you know, whatever goes on at 9 and 7 hypothetically in the future. We are missing executives who love the business of television and understand audiences and programming. And that has the capacity to transform what currently is a flagging industry. Correct. If you've got an executive who understands what it takes to make television, and they will take risks to make television. They will do big things and take big swings. And that is going to help, dare I say it, rejuvenate, revitalize, encourage reinvestment in the Australian television industry.
Agreed.
Thank you.
All right. Doctor Who fans in the UK are furious the long-running sci-fi show will premiere on BBC iView at midnight before screening on television around 18 hours later. The change comes to allow Disney Plus to premiere new episodes to American audiences at the more friendly time of 7 p.m. in the US. Each episode will be available simultaneously around the world, meaning here in Australia we'll be able to watch at 10 a.m. on Saturday mornings, Eastern Standard Time. Robbo.
Point of order, just before you start, Mr. McKnight, there's even some conversation around whether that's right, because the calculation based on daylight savings and all of those sorts of things starting and finishing in various places, it should, if it airs midnight in the UK, if it's simultaneously released, it should air in the east coast of Australia, 9 a.m. Saturday, yet Disney put out a press release today saying it will be 11 a.m.
I've got to ask, who asked to use Doctor Who? I mean, who cares? Like, just watch the show when it comes out. What's happening here? Doctor Who? Who cares?
Well, lots of people.
It's an interesting thing that an American entity can come in and change the way a show is broadcast, especially such an iconic show.
Yes. Rob.
Yeah, wait, sorry.
Don't they get go at that because they paid the big money for it?
Well, that's obviously part of the deal.
I wanted more of a reaction there, but I was going to make the same point that Mock made. They get to do it, I guess. But doesn't this also create a kind of vibe and an excitement of when it's going to come through? So if you're talking about East Coast, then you've got the central timeline there, then you've got the West Coast. That's pretty good, right? Like that's
the timing's fantastic. I mean,
yeah.
if you're delaying it in Australia, that's a major problem. The whole point was it was a simultaneous release. Maybe there's just been some time zone conversion issues.
No, wait.
What? Hang on. What is it, Robert?
So there was a certain TV executive that's still in power that didn't care for fast tracking and knew that you could download things quickly. We're talking in the early 2010s. That said, look, we'll fast track, but if you look it up, you'll find out who said it. This particular woman said, we don't care about fast tracking. We will play the shows when we want to play it. Guess what? More people downloaded those shows to watch them than they did on the broadcast network that paid millions of dollars in order to broadcast them. It's that kind of arrogance. That arrogance spread throughout the industry, though, about when they did fast track. So remember, fast track was a promo line? We're fast tracking this from the US. Well, not fast enough. You know, the episode was released on Saturday, and now we're seeing Veronica Mars on Monday as if it's fast tracked. What a load of rubbish! And that happened a lot.
Went through that problem as well, though.
No, everyone did it. Everyone did it, but there was a particular TV executive that went out and did press and said, "We don't care about fast tracking. We will broadcast shows when we want to." Now, how did that go?
How's things going for them?
They still have a job as the CEO of the network.
Hold on.
Spit take. There we go. Robert's back.
I've just done the time zone conversion for the 16th of May, which would be the same by the time we get to that point.
Give or take.
New York is 7 p.m., London is midnight, and Sydney, Australia will be 9 a.m.
Oh, yes. I love
this
it.
This guy knows his time zones.
This one.
Can I ask a question, Rob?
I can't finger my box the right way.
That's right. You finger your box however you need to.
That way.
Can I ask you a question, Rob, around the controversy? Is it and I know you'll be close to this because you're a Whovian yourself, is part of the challenge that for particularly UK fans, they get it at a god-awful hour.
Yeah,
and we Antipodeans just accidentally get to benefit from it happening at a pretty reasonable hour instead of 5 a.m. on Sunday.
Well, the rest of the world has always accepted that it goes to air on the BBC first. Even if it's simulcast, like ABC iView used to start airing it around the same time as or as soon as it finished in the UK. Someone might correct me on that if it was the same time, but I think it was when it finished in the UK straight away. It was available on iView for a few years. The problem for people in the UK is it airs at midnight. They're going to get up, wake up in the morning. Spoilers will be everywhere on the net because people do that.
Welcome to
they like might watch
2024.
Annoying, yeah.
Wait a minute, don't they have that experience with US content now anyway? Like where
this is historically British show.
Sure, right? and I totally hear
but you
that.
You don't need to say I loved it when the Doctor died or whatever, you know.
When the Doctor died? Spoilers.
But I agree with that, Rob. I agree. Yes,
you can say I loved the episode, I hated the episode, but you don't need to give plot points in your Twitter feed just to prove that you saw it.
Unfollow those people. Right?
Life's not as simple as that because you never know when it's going to happen or by who. But, yes, it's a good policy. But it's a historic thing, and I get why it's causing outrage in the UK, and I think fair enough, to be honest. So, for us in Australia, happy days. I'm happy, a good time. Mm. But there will be hell to pay if Disney Australia put it on at 11 a.m. when it should be at 9 a.m. So
agreed.
That's going to be a problem. All right, it's time to move on because it's time to do this. It's time to open the TV Binge Box.
I have to remember to mute Rob earlier.
I love that.
And just a quick thing on the Doctor Who, there was a question from someone. No, it won't be on the ABC. You will have to watch it on Disney Plus. All right. A couple of quickies from me. I have finally discovered Foundation on Apple TV Plus. Malk, did you mention this one? Someone mentioned it to me, and I really love this show. I think it's three seasons in. I'm into season two now. I'm binging every possible moment. Really, really love it. It's a great show. Stan has got Population 11, which I think you've seen, Malk.
Yes, I have.
But I've watched all – every episode now as well, because all the episodes are on Stan. It's a great series. It goes in different directions than what you might expect. It's not what you expect when you first start watching it. It's not this cute little comedy. It's a good drama. It's got good twists. And I think it's really worth a watch. That is,
and that's what I wasn't able to articulate last week, Rob. I think you've done better than I have when I mentioned it.
Cool. That's Population 11 on Stan. Robbo, what have you been watching?
So I don't always watch what's coming out or what's about to come out, but I've discovered The Orville. Now, I know it's an old show created by Seth MacFarlane. That first episode, the pilot, is fantastic. You've got because I think you go into that kind of show thinking, oh, it's going to be Seth MacFarlane humour all the way, and it's sprinkled. And there are nice kind of character developments. And the action sequences, while they have to be cheap considering they spent so much money on the spaceship graphics and the CGI and all that kind of thing, it still really fits. So you've got this major action sequence at the end of the pilot. But you've got these nice kind of stories that are developing throughout it. I think it's great. I think he's such a wonderful talent. I'm also continuing with Ted. I've had a bit of a Seth marathon, actually. But The Orville was the first one, the show that I discovered this week. I'm loving that. You can watch that on Disney Plus and also on SBS. It is wonderful and fun. And it's not slow, and you appreciate everyone, and everyone's got something in them. It's really, really fun. So check that show out, The Orville on SBS and Disney Plus.
Thank you. Will Stan lose Doctor Who, their collection? Brant is asking that. I would say eventually, Brant, but they would just have to see out contracts. That's why the BBC was able to yank it off BritBox immediately, because they own BritBox. But because they'd still have a licensing deal with Stan at the end of that, I would say it reverts to Disney exclusively. But I don't think Stan will have these new episodes, but I think they will get to hold on to the rebooted 2005 season to the end of Jodie Whittaker until that agreement's over.
That will come out in the wash, won't it? Because likely these deals are always made for life of series, but in a streaming context they tend to be a little bit flexible around some of those kinds of deals. So maybe it could just be, it ends with the Whittaker era and the Nikuti Gatwa series is only a Disney thing.
No dramas at all.
High visual. Shooty. That's my new warm-up for the week, friends. Is it my turn now, Rob? Sorry for jumping in. Great, thanks. I have watched surprisingly a lot of television, given that I'm now a full-time student and actually have to watch television for my studies. And before I start, and please, this is not a part of my thing, but I just want to offer as a special nod to Robbo. Robbo, for one of my media studies subjects this semester, this week I had to watch an episode, in fact, the very first episode of the final season of 30 Rock.
Hey, sorry. I thought you were going to say my show reel or you watch my stuff on YouTube, but you went for another show. But that's okay. I was building myself up for a showbiz reaction going.
That's all right. No, I just wanted to let you know that I watched it and I hated it. The shows that I've watched this week. Look, I really didn't enjoy it. I just felt dumber. But that's me. Other people may enjoy it, including yourself.
Hey, just quickly, just on a side note, what's your retro number just so I can get to your tires? What's your address as well? Just let me know that in the Slack.
MKN.
You fucker. Yeah, go on.
001.
Whatever.
Right, so the two shows that I will talk about, apart from saying that I have really enjoyed Australian Survivor this season and I can't wait to find out who's won, don't tell me I will hurt you. I have previewed.
One time you're not enjoying a spoiler.
No, Rob, it's immediate. So, therefore, spoiler policy.
Wait. It's the Italian guy in the water with the candlestick and the tribal.
The candlestick, whatever. Every time. And every time. La Paglia, you're good. Fruity. This week, I have previewed Gordon Ramsay's Food Stars Australia. I've seen the first two episodes. They air Tuesday, Wednesday next week.
Tracy Grimshaw's a big fan, apparently.
Yeah, maybe. Allegedly, I mean, they don't get on. That's a thing.
A historical reference.
Yes.
To the point where she did an editorial about him on air. Anyway.
Yeah, quite. Yeah. They're not at each other's. He doesn't send her a Christmas put each year, that's for sure. It is everything that is good about the Apprentice franchise and nothing that is bad. It's really smart. It's really sharp. I think that Janine Ellis as the co-foil slash, you know, billionaire entrepreneur
Alpha
situation is doing a great job. It's pretty fast and sharp. It's not a long series. And Gordon Ramsay's Gordon Ramsay. Like, what's on the box is what you get with him, and it's so good. Even down to the fact that because they're dealing with entrepreneurs, they don't just pick the ones that you think that they would pick. There's some smart ones. There's some humble ones. There's some egotistical ones. There's at least one narcissist in there. It is really great in how they have cast the teams. Watch it, watch it, watch it. Choose not to, don't, whatever. Nine Network starts Tuesday, Wednesday next week. The other one has started today on Binge, and I've been fortunate to see the first four. The first two are up right now. And I mentioned it last week. It is the new drama coming from Binge. It's called High Country. It stars
I want to watch this. Yes.
Leah Purcell, Aaron Pedersen, and Ian McElhenney. He of Game of Thrones, if you don't mind. It's brilliant. It is a mystery whodunit in the Victorian Highlands, dripping with a little bit of mystery and a little bit of, I won't say fantasy, but some interest, kind of what, who's the, where's the, what's going on. People are vanishing in a really kind of rapid rate. I love particularly the way that the place, the town that they've set it in the Victorian Highlands are almost another character in the midst of this story. Could not recommend it highly enough. High Country on Binge right now. The first two are available, and it's going to drop week on week from
Mark, next week. Is the town Mount Thomas? If you talk about people vanishing and drama and crime, is it Mount Thomas? No.
I think it's I was going to say Burrigan. No, what's the town that they would go to from Mount
St.
Thomas?
David's. St. David's. Thank
you. I think it's next to St. David's. So it's now, not
really
Mount
quickly,
Thomas.
Yep. Before we go on, just before we end there, Rob.
Burrigan. How do I remember that?
I loved that. I loved that. Now, what is, though, and buzz in if you know on the comments, what is the sister town to Summer Bay?
Yabby Creek.
Hey, there we go. Good work. Good work. Good work. All right, that's it.
Sorry, these brain cells haven't been wasted for no reason.
All right, that brings us to the end of TV Black Box for another week. My thanks to Mulk and David Robbo Robinson. If you want a bit more Rob, go and switch over to 2GB or 4BC right now. I'll be on John Stanley's show in an hour if you're watching this live.
Good man, good man.
I'll be there in an hour, for an hour. I'm literally about to get on a bike, one of those hire bikes, and ride.
Why is there fireworks behind you? What happened to them?
Behind me, he's put fireworks.
Yeah. I've done nothing. I did not a thing.
I didn't do that.
Yeah, that's a Google thing. I think you'll find. Anyway, great outfit. Wow. Well done.
I don't know what happened. That was one for the video podcast. Thank you for your company. Don't forget, if you want all the TV industry news, go to where people in the industry get their news. It's tvblackbox.com.au. We'll see you next week.